from Connect FM. This is Under Review, your weekly deep dive into the world of sports with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing.
The Seahawks are Super Bowl champions. We'll recap the game and look back at some of our prop bets and our preseason predictions.
The Dubois boys basketball team finished the season with an impressive 19-3 record. What lies ahead in the postseason? We'll talk to Coach Dave Bennett.
The Olympics are underway. How much have we been watching? Will this be the year the USA dethrones Canada as the top team in men's hockey? We'll take a closer look.
The Pirates signed Marcell Ozuna this week. Will he make a noticeable difference? And did the team do enough this offseason to compete for the playoffs? We'll touch on this and other quick hitters later in the show. I'm Dave Glass.
And I'm Bob Anderson. Stay tuned as we discuss these topics and more as we go Under Review.
Sponsored by Petula Eye Care, the Falls Creek Eagles, and Labraska Plastic Surgery.
On Connect FM, your only local news radio. Welcome to Under Review for February 11th. D is back home, but he's busy running around with kids, so it's just Dave and I again. We'll hope to have him back next week. In the meantime, can you believe that another NFL season has come and gone, Dave?
I'll tell you what. Somebody once told me a while ago that every year seems to go a little quicker, and with the exception of 2020, I think that's definitely true.
That is a good point. It always feels like the NFL season goes particularly fast. It's week one, then before you know it, it's week 10, and then it's the playoffs, and the Super Bowl is done, and now we're officially in draft season, so we'll be getting to that here eventually. But of course, the Seahawks won Super Bowl 60 by a score of 29-13. And to me, it wasn't as close as even that score would indicate. Kind of a boring Super Bowl, I thought.
Yeah, that was one of the worst first halves you'll ever see. I mean, neither team got much going on offense, no touchdowns. It just felt like Seattle was the better team. And as I said before the game, and this did prove true, if nothing else I said proved true, that if Darnold took care of the ball, that Seattle was going to be in great position. And he did. He wasn't spectacular, but he didn't make the big mistake. May made the big mistakes, and that really caught. I mean, they were going to probably lose anyway, but you can't go -2 in turnovers and win that game.
Yeah, I think you said if Darnold finishes with 200 yards and a touchdown and no interceptions, that's a win, and that's about what his stat line was.
Yeah, I mean, really, and it was such a smart game plan, smart offense, really, really sharp defense, and the players executed. Everybody kind of did what they needed to do, and it really isn't all on Drake May, though, because the left side of his line got completely caved in.
Yeah, did you see Will Campbell, I think, gave up 14 pressures? Yeah. That was the worst of any game this season from what I saw.
And what gets me is, and this is something, it's almost a get lost to me, because, a running back fumbles the ball and the coach will pull him out for half the game or a game or, sit him down. One fumble. Guy gets up 14 pressures and you're just going to leave him in there? I mean, you're not going to change anything?
I guess they didn't have any other options, or at least put a tight end out there.
Put a tight end, chip him with the bat. I don't know. You just can't let 14 pressures happen.
And I did hear a lot of people criticizing Mike McDaniel Josh McDaniels for not adjusting his game plan, or when he did, it was too late. But
there's an overrated guy.
Yeah. Well, if you like punting, you probably like this game. The teams combined for 15 total punts. That's tied for second most in Super Bowl history. And other than the scoop and score, there really wasn't much in terms of memorable plays. But I want to play you a clip here from Dan Patrick and see if you agree with his take on this game, with people calling it a boring one.
To a track meet, the praise flows easily. We hear about elite quarterback play, offensive geniuses, and the game is labeled an instant classic. When the score stays low and defenses take control, the conversation flips. Suddenly it's boring, sloppy, but don't fall for the trap. What we saw last night was not bad football. It was elite football. A defensive clinic delivered on the sport's biggest stage. The Seahawks defense put together a performance for the ages. 6 sacks, 3 forced turnovers, and they had a pick 6. 13 points allowed. Seattle's offense only found the end zone once, and the game was never truly in doubt because every New England possession felt uphill, every snap suffocating. That's the beauty of dominating defense. This was not a game decided by mistakes. Seattle dictated terms from the opening drive and never let go. And now, the Seahawks are world champs, not because the game was flashy, but because it was mastered. I'm Dan Patrick, and this is...
Well, what do you think?
Well, he's about half to three quarters right. I mean, it is very important to give the Seattle defense their due. That, you know, they forced those mistakes. They did dictate the terms of play. It was a masterful scheme. You know, they were confusing Drake May all over the place. So credit. All that is true. Having said that, the NFL goes out of their way to make the rules and their products such that offense beats defense. So when something like that happens, something went really wrong on the other side because, well, look at... Seattle does have a great defense, and look what the Rams did to them.
That's true, okay? Yeah.
Now, they were the only team that did it. I saw that they only gave up like 14 points a game to everybody else, and the Rams got to them three times for like 30-plus. So that, and we said we thought that was probably the real Super Bowl, and it was. And that happens sometimes. I mean, the NFC was just, the top of the NFC was just better, I think. And I think we saw that going in. But so you can give Seattle credit and still say it wasn't the best game. I mean, New England on offense was really, really bad until it didn't matter anymore. I mean, by the time they had one possession where they went down and got that quick score, and you're like, ooh, this might be interesting, and then it wasn't at all. I mean, and so, yeah.
Well, I will say Kenneth Walker, he was the MVP. I really think, I mean, he had a great game, but to me, the MVP was the whole defense. But you can't give it to the whole defense, obviously. But, man, they were just so dominant all game long.
I would have given it to somebody on the defensive line, probably. Look, I don't have any problem with Walker. It makes it tough when it is a situation like that. You're right. Give it to the D coordinator. They won't do that either. But, you know, you mentioned about no memorable plays. The most memorable play for me was actually a play about the losing team. I can't remember if it was the corner or the safety. He was beat, and he dove and just barely tipped it. That was going to be a touchdown.
That was Christian Gonzalez. He was the one Patriot that really stood out to me. He played great, and I think I texted you guys. The Steelers could have had him. They traded up that year. What was it, 3 years ago in the draft, and they took Broderick Jones instead.
Just remember, you were in favor of Broderick Jones.
I was.
You were
I was over Broderick Jones. I wanted the tackle. I wanted one of those three tackles. He just hasn't panned out,
obviously.
No,
well, and we'll talk more about this in draft time, but one of my new axioms with drafting is if you've got players who haven't gotten much field time in college, beware, because athletic talent only take you so far. I want football players, not, you know, combine legends.
And credit to Seattle, they've been taking a lot of football players. Yeah, they've done a great job in the drafts. Mike Tirico brought up a comparison of Dan Marino and Drake May. Marino made the Super Bowl in his third year, never got back. May made it in his second. Most people assume that young quarterbacks are going to get back, but there are no guarantees. What does he or the Patriots need to do to get back to the big game?
Well, first of all, there's 32 teams, so by definition, it's hard to get back,
right? Is, yeah.
I mean, I think Joe Burrow's the better.
Yeah, he made it in the second season.
I mean, he made it, and we definitely thought he, and you know, they just haven't done anything around him, especially on defense. But Joe Burrow is a more direct Dan Marino comparison because Joe Burrow is probably the best pure passer, and Dan Marino definitely was at that point. Drake, look, I know Drake May had a pretty good regular season, and I didn't see his best games, but I watched like 5 of his games. I'm just not that impressed. I saw
a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah, inaccuracy, poor decisions, holding on to the ball too long. Look, he is only second year, and I don't want to be unfair to him because he did go 14-3 and go to the Super Bowl. That's pretty darn good, and nobody thought they were going to be anywhere near that. But for him to get back, he has to cut down on the mistakes, and he has to get better at recognizing. They confused the heck out of him most of that game.
And they did it with really 4-man rushes.
But they were bringing, you know, they were sliding coverages, a couple blitzes. But really what they were doing is showing him a man look and switching to zone, you know, showing a 2 safety shell and then switching to, you know, deep coverage. But There was a lot of stuff like that. Like so many teams, I swear right now, I've never seen the league in such desperate need of good wide receivers overall.
And it's supposed to be a good wide receiver draft.
You look at the Steelers, you look at them. A lot of teams around. Denver needs a wide receiver. There's a lot of good teams that are like one receiver away from being pretty tough. Not to go too much on the Steelers, but, and I know why they did it, but they gave George Pickens away.
Yeah. Well, if I'm New England, I'm taking offensive line because I think that was the biggest problem for them. And Will Campbell was the fourth pick overall, but they could move him inside if they have to. Let's get into some of our predictions here.
If we're going to talk about these prop bets, I'm going to tell you right now, I had a terrible night.
Well, we can get into those too. We both had the Seahawks winning and covering. You had the score 28-21 Seahawks. I had it 30-20.
We were both sort of in the ballpark.
Yeah, we were, but the points were actually under. It was an under game. For the national anthem, you said over, I said under, and you were surprised to know it came under.
I was shocked because it seemed like it was it wasn't long, but I thought it was definitely over, but apparently it was under. Okay.
Yeah, heads and tails. You said heads, I said tails. That's just a 50-50 guess. Opening touchback, we both thought it would be returned. It was a touchback. That was a bit of
a
surprise.
That had to be nerves.
First penalty was a false start. I think we both said anything else. Took the field there. Gatorade bath color, you had red orange. I don't think I said a prediction on the air, but I had it on my contest. I actually got that one right. Yellow green it was.
I said orange for sure.
Yep. And over under fourth down attempts, zero in the game.
I noticed that. About in the fourth quarter, I'm like, man, we are not going to get anywhere near this fourth quarter or this fourth down attempt. And this is, again, where Seattle was smart. Take the points. You believe in your defense, take the points.
They did it all game long. MVP, we both said Darnold. And then I went back and I listened to our first episode from this season, and I listened to our division winners.
We didn't have either of these teams.
Well, the NFC, in the East, we all picked the Eagles. The Eagles won. In the South, the Panthers won it with an 8-9 record. None of us had the Panthers. D and I picked the Buccaneers. You took Atlanta. Out in the West, Seattle won that one. D and I picked the Rams. You picked the Cardinals.
Oh, that's gross.
In the North, the Bears won it. D picked the Lions, and you and I had Green Bay.
So. There's no excuse for the Arizona pick. That was terrible. I stand by they got racked with injuries.
Well, once Parsons went down, their team just struggled from there.
They'll be back next year.
So we went a combined 4-8 in our predictions in the NFC.
All right, you had my worst call already, but you're going to get to my best call here pretty
soon. Okay, in the AFC, the East, the Patriots won it. We all took the Bills.
Yeah.
D said there is no doubt the Bills will win the division. In the South, the Jags won 13-4. We all picked Houston. In the West, you had the Broncos winning the West,
And everybody was so surprised when I was like, the Chiefs are not winning this division. They might not even make the playoffs. And everybody's like, no, no. I'm like, listen.
And D and I had the Chiefs.
Yep.
And then lastly, we had the Steelers won the North.
I definitely had the Ravens, didn't I?
You took Cincy.
Oh, that's right. I thought they were going to really bounce back.
And D and I both picked the Ravens. And then finally, with the Super Bowl, you had the Bills and the Packers.
I definitely had the Packers.
Yep, Bills and the Packers. I picked the Rams and the Ravens, and D picked the Eagles and the Ravens.
Well, we were terrible, but, injuries again, and it's not like Cincy was going to make the Super Bowl or anything, but when he got hurt, that just destroyed their season.
It did, for sure, and I don't think too many people had the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year. Probably not even Lonnie.
No, even if Lonnie if you have Lonnie Truth Serum, he would probably say 10-7 in a wild card.
Yep. All right, it's time to get to a break. When we return, we'll talk to the head coach of the DuBois Beavers basketball team. You're listening to Under Review, sponsored by Fatula Eye Care, the Falls Creek Eagles, and Nebraska Plastic Surgery.
You're listening to Under Review Sports Talk. More takes, more talk, more sports. Let's go back to the guys.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by Fatula Eye Care. Reach out to Dr. Dan and his team for all your needs. The DuBois Beavers basketball team finished the season with an impressive 19-3 overall record. Here to talk about it is head coach Dave Bennett. Dave, welcome back to Under Review.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Great. Good to have you with us. It was quite a season for you guys. Is this the most talented team you've had since you took over as the head coach at DuBois?
Oh, that's a great question. We had some very good teams. You know, the other team that ended the regular season 19-3 since I've been coaching had Chase Husted, Lennon Lindholm, Jordan Summers, Nick Farrell, Nick Felix, so on and so on. So that was a very talented team as well. I think this team is, I think we have some physical kids, some athletic competitors that really mesh together great. So I'm not sure if it's our most talented team, but they definitely work well together.
Well, of course, one of the biggest highlights for you had to be Maddox becoming the all-time leading scorer in DuBois basketball history. I know you're the coach of the entire team, but as a parent, that had to be quite a moment for you.
Yeah, that certainly a surreal moment. The through the years, seeing his hard work, dedication, commitment, you know, and the desire to excel with all the work he puts in. You know, as a parent, it's really nice to see your child work so hard at a goal and then accomplish it. So that certainly was rewarding, and no question about it.
And I got to ask you, too, about that game last week with Elk County. What was it, 43 games they had won in a row? Talk about that and ending their streak, especially since you played there, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's always good when you can beat Elk County Catholic. They're such a respected team, and they just have sustained success year in and year out. And knowing that they were undefeated this year, they had won 43 straight regular season games. It was nice to put together a solid effort and come out with the win. That's always a good feeling.
And if I'm reading the schedule right, you play them again tomorrow for the third time this year. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Yeah. So in the semifinals of the league playoffs, they go we lost the tiebreaker, even though we split head-to-head and we had the larger win differential, but that's not stated in the new league's bylaws. So they went down to the second tiebreaker, then the third tiebreaker, fourth tiebreaker, and then finally the fifth tiebreaker was best overall record.
Oh.
And we definitely had some very high quality games that we played against Hollidaysburg, Indiana, Oil City. So I strength of schedule was not a factor in that, but yes, we will be playing there tomorrow.
Well, I'll tell you, looking through your results here, what amazes me is how good your defense obviously has to be. You've held, like, I want to say 13 or 14 teams at 40 points or lower and a number under 32 points or lower. Can you speak to just how – is this the best defensive team maybe you've ever had?
Yeah, it's certainly up there. If it's not the best, it's one of the best. And I think that probably goes back to – some of the comments I made initially. You know, we have some competitors, some athletes. We have size, physicality, and then especially in recent weeks, we've been rebounding the ball much better. So when you put all that together, you know, that can make for a very good defense. You know, our defense is probably spearheaded by Noah Farrell. You know, he's just physical, athletic, excellent communicator. He's just kind of our glue. And then along with that, you know, you have guys like Trey, Maddox, Thatcher, Grady Galashinsky, Dylan Horner, who are all, you know, veteran seasoned guys that really mesh well together. So defensively, that is certainly our calling card. Offensively, you know, we have Maddox, and then we kind of get some other stuff based on how people are guarding Maddox. So, but defense is our primary reason for success.
We're talking to Dave Bennett, the head coach of the DuBois Beavers basketball team. Dave, let's talk a little bit about how this postseason works. I know it's confusing for me. So you play Elk County tomorrow, and if you win that, you play what, Saturday night for the league championship. And this is new, right?
Correct. Yeah, this is once once Brookville went to the KSAC and we kind of did District 9 League and AML merged, this became a new format for us.
Okay, and then after that, you would represent, if you win this, the District 9 League against the District 10 champion, is that correct?
No, actually, we would move into district playoffs. Punxsutawney did not enter the district playoffs, so we will be, they're the other 5A team in the district. So we are the District 9 5A representative, and we would play at Meadville in a sub-region with District 9, District 10, and District 6. So we would open with at Meadville on February 24th.
Okay, and then if you win that, you would play for the championship of that? Is that right?
And then if we win that, we would play for the championship of the sub-region against the District 6 champ, which will likely be Hollidaysburg or Greater Johnstown.
Okay, and that's where it gets confusing.
February 27th, likely.
And is it single elimination from there?
So if we get to the sub-region championship, so if we are able to beat Meadville, then we automatically get a state playoff game.
Okay.
So the champion of the sub-region plays the seventh seeded team from the Whippeal, and the runner up would play the fifth seeded team from the Whippeal. And there would be a good chance that game would be a home game. So that's down a lot of scenarios down the road a little bit, but that's kind of how the playoff picture's laying out.
Well, and I see that on looking at the schedule, you know, a few weeks ago you already played Hollidaysburg, and it was a really, really close game. So I assume you probably saw some things that you definitely feel like you can hang with them since it was such a close game.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, I think those games are very important to play. You know, it alluded to when we were talking about the league playoffs, how a game like that's probably one of the reasons that we dropped the tiebreaker, you know, that for our league or the top seed in our league for a home game tomorrow night. But with that said, you know, that game, you know, being challenged, having to figure some things out, learning some things about your team and some deficiencies are hugely beneficial. So that game against Hollidaysburg, for a number of reasons, was a beneficial game for us.
The last question I have for you is, it's a long, grueling schedule, and you have played, you know, a lot of tough teams. Are you pretty healthy going into the postseason here?
So I'm going to find some wood to knock on, but yes, currently we're pretty healthy going into the playoffs. So I expect tomorrow night to be a physical, highly contested game, and it should be a great one. So we'll be ready to go.
Yeah, speaking of that game tomorrow night, I'm sure you'd love the community to come out and support you guys. Game time's what, 7 o'clock?
7 p.m., yes.
Okay, and talk to me a little bit about the difference between playing there and playing in Dubois. How big of a difference is home field advantage in basketball?
Yeah, it can be significant. You know, when we played at home the other night, we had an incredible crowd. I think that was our best student section of the year, and so that was great. You know, at the end of the day, though, we lost to them on a tip-in at the buzzer about a month ago. We beat them at home about a week ago. Both teams know each other so well that I expect that we're going to show up there tomorrow night. The ball is going to get tipped, and it's going to be two really good teams that know each other well that are just competing. So I think it'll be a great one.
Just a couple quick rapid fire ones, and we'll get you out of here, Dave. Who is your most improved player this year?
Great question. I'm going to say Trey Wingard, because coming into the year, everybody knows that Trey's such a great athlete, great baseball player, awesome football player, going to be a Division I catcher. With that said, you know, throughout the year, like, some of the offensive burst that he gave us was much needed, and not just the conventional scoring that he did in the past. He's really shot the ball well from three-point range and spread the floor, which is something we desperately needed.
What's your favorite basketball movie? Are you a Hoosiers fan?
Probably a toss-up between Glory Road and Hoosiers, but okay. I'm going to go with the old standby of Hoosiers.
All right, very good. And I don't know if I asked you this one last time. Who is your favorite team? Are you a big NBA guy, big college guy? Who do you like?
Nah, I'm a I'm more of a college guy. I do enjoy the NBA when it's the playoffs. I more than a favorite team, it's probably style of play because coaches change. You know, so there are a few college teams I root for, but a lot of times it's style of play. So there was a time that, you know, I loved Villanova when Jay Wright was the coach there, and how their offensive, their defensively, what they did, everything about them. I think that I probably, if I just had to root for a team and not watch it through the lens as a coach, I'd probably Duke is the team that I root for.
One quick hitter from me, and I know you're so busy this time of year, you don't have time to watch much, but do you have a favorite winter Olympic sport? We were talking about that earlier.
There you go.
You know, and unfortunately, you know, with our schedule and you know, I do coach my other son, my youngest son's fourth grade basketball team as well. So I haven't had time to watch any of the Winter Olympics. With that said, I am more of a Summer Olympics guy. But I'm looking forward to trying to catch a little bit of the Winter Olympics here one of these nights.
All right, Dave. Well, hey, we really appreciate the time, and we wish you good luck here in the postseason.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me.
Sure. Under Review is sponsored by Fatula Eye Care. When we return, we'll talk about the Olympics. Stay right with us here on Connect FM.
Let's get back to the action. You're listening to Under Review with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing on Connect FM.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by the Falls Creek Eagles. The Olympic Games are underway, and how much have you watched so far, Dave?
More than I'd really like to admit, probably. I've watched a lot. I love curling.
Nothing else on.
We're going to talk about curling later, but I've watched that. I've watched a lot of women's hockey. We'll talk probably about that because the U.S. women really took the wood to Canada yesterday.
Yeah, 5-0, right?
Yeah, and it really wasn't that close. They just pounded them.
And that's the first time I see that Canada's women have been shut out in
Ever.
An Olympic game.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've watched some biathlon. I've watched some. I've watched all of it. It's little bits and pieces. I watched some great luge action yesterday.
All right. What is your favorite event?
Oh, man, I got to go with curling just because I live for it. I mean, I watch it in the off years when I can, but it's like 2+ weeks of curling, curling, curling. We had mixed doubles. The U.S. won a silver medal. Men's, four-man men's team started today. Spoiler alert, if you watched it, maybe you don't want to listen or didn't watch it yet, the U.S. won their first match today. It's a bunch of young kids all in their 20s, second youngest team over there. Great finish to that match to win against Czechia. The women start play here shortly, and I just love it. There's so much strategy. It's so many different pieces to it.
Yeah, so I don't understand the game, so can you try to explain? I see there's innings, and then you get what?
Ends, but yeah.
They're called ends?
They're called ends.
Okay, and what, you get 4 throws per end?
Well, actually, it depends on the type. Mixed doubles.
So I was watching mixed doubles last night.
There were five stones per end. The female would shoot the first and the last, and the male would shoot the middle three.
Okay.
Now that's over, and now it's traditional, quote-unquote, curling with four-person teams, and each shooter gets 2, so there'll be 8 total stones for each team in an end.
Wow, that's a long end.
Well,
and how many
yeah, but
do they
move
play?
Pretty quick. They play, the mixed plays 8, regular is 10.
Okay, so you earn points by getting closest to the center?
Well, okay, so the scoring is the closest to the center. It obviously is what you want to score, but if you have, let's say the 3 closest to the center, you get 3, you know, and it doesn't matter. The other team could have 5, but if yours is closer, you'll be the only one to score. So the closest one or more scores
okay,
to the
so
center.
So if you have 2 closest to the center, you get 2, and you just keep going from there.
Right, and there's a huge advantage in the game to shooting last in an end.
Yeah,
and that's
I've
called
seen
the
that.
Hammer. And
okay.
So the idea is you want to keep the other team to ideally 0 or 1, probably 1 in when they have the hammer, and get 2 or more
it's
when
like
you
tennis,
have the hammer.
Holding serve versus,
yes.
You know.
When you have hammer, you definitely don't want to, you want to get 2 or 3. The U.S. got 3 in a big late end today, which is really what propelled them to victory. If you can steal one when it's, yeah. that's even bigger, but that's more rare.
Break a serve, that's
yeah.
what I was thinking of in
it's,
tennis.
It's like that, so, and it's like, there's some shuffleboard to it. and there's some billiards because there's a lot of angles. You know, a lot of times they're playing double hits. You want to hit this rock and take out two other ones.
Oh, I saw that last night. That was incredible. I mean, those guys make it look so easy, though.
And they're reading. And the other thing is you have to read because when they call it curling, it's because you're putting spin on it, and it curls as it goes down when you throw it slowly.
They put a little spin on it, but then they use the brush to help.
The brush can do two things. It can either reduce the curl or make more curl, depending on how you do it, and it can extend the length. If you throw it too hard, there's nothing they can do. But if you throw it a little too soft, you can sweep it.
It's like a friction thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Reduce friction, maybe.
So, and I can't explain. I fell in love with it in 2002, and I just don't.
Have you tried it?
No, but I have an invite now to the Pittsburgh Curling Club, and so I'm like, I'm taking advantage of that. I don't know when, but it's going
to
happen.
Well, you have to take Garrett with you.
Oh, yeah, Garrett actually went to Canada, Garrett Rowan, and with his family and curled last year with his boys, and he said it was just fantastic. So, but I know we wanted to get to some other sports. The U.S. is off to a really strong start. So is the host squad, Italy. They're tied with Norway for the most medals, but the U.S. is in third with 11 as we speak. So, so far, so good for the U.S.
Okay. Are you ready to get to the men's hockey?
Yes, and we will tell everybody, no spoiler alerts, Bob is doing what I usually do, and he's taping the hockey, so we can't talk about the results today, but we can talk about the overall event.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do a little preview here. Of course, the NHL is on a three-week break, but the NHL players are back at the Olympics. This is the first time since 2014. So just the format here, ladies and gentlemen, there are 12 teams. They divide them into three groups of four. The top three, so each group winner advances. They get a bye. Every team makes the playoffs, but they get a bye. And then the top team, top second place team also gets a bye. They do the 3 points for the regulation win, 2 points for overtime or shootout win, 1 point for the OT or shootout loss. Do you like the format, Dave?
They're so time limited. Yeah. I like the points. I like the points a lot. But, you know, because everything is about the medal round, putting them in the three round robin games, it doesn't, you know, the real games aren't.
Yeah, it's almost just practice.
It is.
Yeah.
Like in the women's, it's a lot. There were more games, and, you know, U.S. played Canada in the preliminary, which happened yesterday. I think that's a little bit more interesting that way.
And I don't know how they do these groups. Like, they have the U.S., Canada, and Sweden all in their own groups.
I think that they actually take the power and just keep the top three, or, you know, because if you look at that, I think that they certainly don't want to put the U.S. and Sweden or the U.S. and Canada in a prelim group.
Right, yeah. You want to save the best for later.
Well, it would be unfair, too. I mean, because then you'd end up with two schmo teams winning a different group, and that's not right.
And they get a bye then. Is this the USA's best chance to win gold they haven't won since 1980?
Well, I don't know. They've come so close. There was the golden goal moment with Crosby. What was that now, 16 years ago? And they've had some other good teams. I have concerns about the way they built this team. They left a lot of talent behind.
Jason Robertson's not there.
No, Robertson is the one that sticks out to me. Yep. I'm not crazy about putting Tom Wilson on this team because this is not – Olympic hockey is not as physical.
Well, he's with Canada.
Well, I'm sorry. Okay, you're right. But I'm not crazy about that decision either. But, you know, the Kachucks, you know, what worked at Four Nations probably isn't going to work as good here. And the other thing I'm really concerned about is there's a right decision and a wrong decision at goalie. And if they go with Binnington, that is the absolute wrong decision. Okay. I don't care what he did last year. He's been horrible this year.
Yeah, I agree with Canada. And then if you look at the U.S. goaltending, I'm a little concerned about that, too. And that should be their strength. But Hellebuyck has not been good this year. Ottinger has not been that good.
I mean,
Swayman, to me,
is probably the one who should start. Yeah. But I'll bet they go with Hellebuyck.
I do too. But in a short tournament like this, you don't have a whole lot of time to waste. But if you look at the U.S. Lines here, I love that Jack Eichel with the Kachuk line.
Yes.
That's awesome. And then you get a second line of Matthews, Gensel, and Boldy. So that's a heck of a top six. But to me, the strength is in their defense. They've got a great defensive core. I think they're better than any defensive core. Even Canada.
They're better defensively, I think, than Canada's. Canada's got such firepower back there.
They do.
But, I really think that there's a chance this year for some of the quote-unquote second-tier teams to really make some noise.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about them. Who's your favorite dark horse?
My favorite dark horse? Oh, well, everybody always overlooks the Finns, but I think I think this year they're not as strong as they usually
are.
Well,
no Barkov. That hurts.
Yeah, well, and there's a few other things going on there. But I'll tell you who you really have to watch out for is Germany. Grubauer's been playing well, and, you know, they don't have the depth.
Yeah.
But in a one-game scenario, if Draisaitl goes crazy, I mean, they've also got Stützle. Yep. I mean, they've got some real high-end talent in Germany.
Yeah, I like that team. I like, of course, I like Czechia.
Czechia's always tough.
Yeah, they have 26 there's 26 Czechs in the NHL. 8 of them are goalies. So they have
that's a problem.
They have two good goalies that they can go to that could steal games. And in a short series, goaltending can be huge. But they have a great first line. Hertl, Natchez, and Pasternak on that first line. I love that. They're a little weak on D, though. Do you think it's Sweden, Canada, and U.S. in some form that wins the medals?
Well, here's my semi-hot take. I think this is going to be a rough year for Sweden.
Oh, wow. Why is that?
Their defense, they've got, you know, the Carlsons, they've got a lot of offensive, defensive talent, but I'm not crazy about them in their own end at all.
Yeah, and Hedman he's been hurt.
Yeah, and he's old too. I mean, I don't know. I think I would definitely favor Canada. I mean, I look at their four lines and it's, you know, which one are you going to stop? But anything's possible, but I really... The problem with them is if they make the wrong choice at goaltender, they may regret that. Mm-hmm. But the U.S. should absolutely medal. I'm just not convinced they're going to win gold.
Okay. Well, if you look at Canada's lines, I mean, it's ridiculous when Sidney Crosby is your third line center.
And he should be, really.
Do you like Celebrini with McDavid?
Yeah, I think speed with speed is always a good thing.
They have Wilson on that line too. At least they did in practice.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. I want to go back to that. You know, Wilson should be suspended for that hit that happened a couple weeks ago. And there's no fighting. There's definitely not going to be any fighting, and they're much more aggressive on hits to the head. So I don't know if I'd have taken him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they can go to Jarvis. They can go to Bennett if they want. So they've got depth there for sure.
But I really like, you know, McKinnon's playing out of his mind this year.
Yes.
And he's second line center, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, think about that.
Oh, isn't that great?
McDavid, wait, if you got a checking line for the U.S., who do you put him up against? Do you put him against McKinnon or McDavid?
Oh,
and then there's Crosby, who's going to see the weak, you know, your weak third pairs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my. I mean, I'm just looking at some of these teams here. Switzerland, they have 10 NHL players on that team. They got Hischier, Fiala, Josi. I don't mind that team. Our good friend Artur Shelovs is one of the goalies for Latvia. I don't think he's going to play, though.
Well, I was reading a preview about them. He should play because their other goalies have not been as good. But here again, too many coaches look at, like, last year,
yep.
You know.
I know. Well, that's who the U.S. starts with, Latvia, tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to see. Maybe we'll get to see Shelovs in that game.
We probably won't see him start, but he might come in.
I am interested to see what the ice conditions are like, see if they're...
It sounds like they've improved a lot.
Okay. And that could be huge. So today, Finland, Slovakia, that game was already played. Italy and Sweden, that should be going on right now as
it
we
is.
Speak. Okay, so.
Are you taping it?
Yeah, I am.
You might want to check it out.
Okay, there's your hot take. Maybe coming true, huh?
All right. I want to check that out.
Give me your predictions. Gold, silver,
I can't go
bronze.
Away from Canada. I think it's Canada, U.S., and I think bronze, I'm going to go a little bit off the board, and I'm going to say, well, let me see those groups. You have those groups. I don't have the groups in front
of
me.
Okay,
the groups are going to matter.
And then I'm going to need your MVP, too. So let me go back to the groups.
I'm going to give McKinnon the MVP because, you know, he was one of those guys who's like, I don't even care about doing anything else. I'm here to play hockey. And it's like, ooh, okay, he's, like, really serious about this. Oh, let's see. I'll tell you what, Sweden got a kind of a break with that group.
They're with Finland, Slovakia, Italy.
I'm going to say Czech Republic gets the bronze.
All right. Well, you and I are thinking on the same level. We have the same three teams, but I'm taking the U.S. to finally get over the hump this year. Maybe that's my red, white, and blue goggles coming out there. I'm going to say they beat Canada in the gold medal game, and then I got Czechia over Sweden in the bronze game.
That's a fair. Although I'm going to. My hot take is Sweden doesn't even make the medal, the final four. They get upset in the quarters.
All right. And my MVP is Jack Eichel.
Okay.
Because I like him with the Kachucks. He's having a good season,
too. Well, I'll tell
you
this. If we win the cup or the gold, I guess. Yeah. He should be. I mean, they're going to need him to really dominate.
Okay. Do you have an MVP from Canada?
McKinnon.
You're taking McKinnon. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
That'll do it for our Olympic preview. When we come back, we're going to touch on some other quick hitters. The Buccos have a new bat. Is he the right guy? Under Review is sponsored by the Falls Creek Eagles. Keep it right here.
Let's get back to the action. You're listening to Under Review with Bob Anderson, Dave Glass, and Dave Herzing on Connect FM.
Welcome back to Under Review. This segment is sponsored by Lebraska Plastic Surgery, where they help you look and feel your best. It's time for some quick hitters, and I thought we'd start with the Buccos, Dave. The Pirates continued a busy offseason. They signed Marcell Ozuna to a one-year, $12 million deal that does contain a mutual option for the next year. Grade this signing for us.
No, I think that's a solid B-. I mean, listen, we should probably get into this a little bit. He's kind of taking Kutch's place on the roster. I do think it's an upgrade. I know a lot of people maybe don't want to hear that, but you know, I'm a little bit annoyed with Pirate fans for like, oh, they should have treated Kutch better and they should have given him a send-off. Do you want to win or do you want that? Because I want players who actually can win.
And we've had that before.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, when you're going 50 and 110, I don't care who you have. You know, sell all the tickets you want for your old stars, but they didn't owe him anything. Remember, he was in Philly. He was all over the place. I mean, if everybody should have been mad, it's when we traded him to Philly.
Yeah.
Now it's like he's 39 years old. Come on. But I don't have any problem. Ozuna, the thing that worries me about Ozuna is that last year his numbers really fell off. Now, I understand he had a little bit of a hip issue going on, but there are some markers in his game at his age that make me wonder if he's going to bounce back. But the counter to that is it's only a one-year deal. $12 million, as much as I hate to say this, in baseball numbers, that's nothing. That's absolutely nothing. So it's a really low-risk, kind of high-reward play because 2 years ago, he was amazing. If he's yep. half as good next year, this coming year as he was in 2024, they're going to be fine. Yeah. So it was worth it.
Well, he's a three-time All-Star. He hit 40 home runs that year that you were talking yeah. about there. Now, he even batted over 300 that
yes,
year.
Yes, yes. In 2024, he was absolutely amazing.
Yep, but they said not only did his home run total drop last year, his bat speed dropped as well.
That's what scares me.
Yeah. He's strictly DH. He hasn't played the field for 2 years.
That also scares me because it just jams up your whole lineup, but
no,
it is what it is
there. But hey, the Pirates, they've spent roughly $105 million. That's the largest figure in franchise history.
Well, that's, you know, low bar to clear. I don't want to make excuses for this ownership group because they, you know, if you own a team, you should be able to spend more money than this. Look, I'm glad they did this as opposed to doing nothing. So okay, you know, that's why I gave it a B-. It's not a D, it's not a C, it's something. They're going to have to do a little bit more.
Yeah, and the Pirates were last in the majors last year with 117 home runs. This, to me, sounds like they're trying to address their power issues.
No team can win these days without being at least average in the power department. You don't see, you know, Punch and Judy teams that don't hit home runs. The 1985 Cardinals, they couldn't win today.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Gavin McKenna. He got into a fight, not on the ice, off the ice. He broke someone's jaw, and that was after the outdoor game. Was charged with aggravated assault.
Those
charges
dropped.
Have been dropped, yep. But the trouble with the law kind of compounds what has been a somewhat disappointing season in Happy Valley. My question is, do you think Gavin McKenna will be the first overall pick when the draft is held in June?
No, I don't.
Wow.
I thought that even before this fight because I've watched quite a bit of Penn State hockey. Gavin McKenna is an elite passer. He's got a pretty good shot. With the puck on his stick, he's a good player. Away from the puck, he's terrible. I mean, Bob, he is really, really bad. He doesn't back check. He doesn't pay attention to detail. I watched him really, really closely in the game I was at. And then I've watched him on TV a few times, and he's going to be a top five pick. All right. He's got a really good chance to be a great NHL player, but the comparisons to Crosby, I don't see it. I just don't see it at all. I mean, if you're talking about that, you're talking about an elite game changing player. He's a good player, but there've been a lot of games I haven't thought he was the best player on his own team. Hmm. So he's probably better than that. I'm probably underselling him, but I do want to talk about this fight thing because there's a lot of fans making excuses that this other kid was goading him and making comments about his mom. And look, that's not cool. I'm not excusing what this kid did, but you can't punch a guy in the face for it. You have to walk away, get security. There's all kinds of things. Sidney Crosby would never have punched the guy in the face. Heck, Alex Ovechkin wouldn't have punched the guy in the face. Tom Wilson probably wouldn't have punched the guy in the face. You don't see the top players getting headlines like this in the NHL. And it speaks, I think, to his immaturity, by the way, and the fact that I think there may have been alcohol served at this event and he wasn't old enough to be drinking it. I mean, that's an allegation.
He put himself in a bad situation. So,
yeah, he absolutely put himself. He should have walked away. And, you know, yeah, and I knew that aggravated assault charge would be dropped. And he'll probably just get community service or whatever. But it's just a terrible look. And he handled it 100% the wrong way.
Yeah. So I was looking a little bit at some of the other prospects. And now Bleacher Nation has Ivar Stenberg at number one.
Stenberg is probably going to be number one.
Yep. And he's playing in Sweden against older, experienced men. Scouts praise his hockey sense and consistency. And if the Canucks end up with the first pick, they love their Swedes.
Well, and if I'm a GM, I'm looking at this situation and I'm saying, okay, his on-the-ice product has been good, not great. But if I take him number one overall, if he comes into the NHL as an 18-year-old, are other teams going to be able to goad him into taking that first punch? I mean, you know, does he have the maturity and the temperament to handle that environment? As much as I love Crosby, it took him a couple years just to figure out how to deal with the refs and deal with some of that stuff. And McKenna is nowhere near where Crosby was.
All right, I'm going to ask you a little bit about Joey Porter's comments on the Cam Hayward podcast. This is what he had to say about Big Ben.
You really are pushing it this time, aren't you?
That we don't talk about?
I know.
Is crazy. Like out of anybody should talk, he should never grab a microphone and really talk Steeler business.
Yeah. Joey Porter did not like Ben Roethlisberger either as a player or as a human. What do you think about Big Ben? Do you think that he's justified in what he's saying here?
The allegations were there. I mean, remember he wrecked the motorcycle where there was the stuff, the allegations with the woman in the bar and all this stuff. We weren't there. We don't know what happened, but does this surprise me? No, not really.
I have to say, when I think of my favorite Steelers, Big Ben doesn't come to mind. To me, he was always kind of a bit of a diva, drama queen, loved to exaggerate injuries, you know, is always shaking his hand or something, you know, when he got up from a bad hit or whatever. Of course, he was the best Steeler quarterback of my lifetime, though. I'm not taking that away from him. Just from a person standpoint, I just didn't care for him that much.
It kind of sounds like Aaron Rodgers to me, but anyway.
Yeah, maybe it comes with quarterbacks.
Well, look, you've got to have a little bit of an ego to be a quarterback, and I'm not taking that away from him. And look, he was really good. I bought his jersey when he was a rookie before he got into all this crap because it's like he was the best rookie quarterback I had ever seen. Remember, they were crazy, went 15-1 or whatever that year. And he won, you know, two Super Bowls, went to another one. There were years where he carried that offense. So he deserves those plaudits. But I like you, I think there were some serious character considerations there. And I think it's telling that on a franchise that's kind of as tight as the Steeler alumni group is, they're usually pretty tight. For somebody to come out and say that is pretty telling.
Bill Belichick was surprisingly denied first ballot Hall of Fame induction. He needed 40 or 50 votes. He supposedly got 39. This is a guy who won 8 Super Bowls and is the second winningest coach in NFL history. Do you think he got cheated?
No, I didn't. All right. This is a math problem. I want to make this very, very clear because the Baseball Hall of Fame does this too, and they do it to themselves. If you say, okay, you can only vote for 5 people on a ballot, and you say somebody has to get 80% to get in, and there's like 10 people available or 15 people available, in order to get more than 1 or 2 people voted in, you basically have to collude to get everybody, because, you know, the one guy came out and talked about, look, there's a backlog of people. I wanted to see Roger Craig get in. I wanted to see this other guy get in. And so you know, he took his votes and he put them over there. So if you dilute those votes, getting to 80% is almost impossible. This happened to baseball when there was that huge backlog here about 5 or 6 years ago, and everybody was filling up their ballot, and there were still people being left out, left out, left out. It wasn't a conspiracy. It's a math problem. The way to fix it, don't put a limit on how many you can vote for. That's the problem right now. If they just said you could vote for 10, Belichick would be in. I despise Belichick, and I'm right here to say he should have been voted in, but it wasn't a conspiracy. It was a math problem.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way you put that. To me, I think the ballot should be public. When they cast their ballots, you know, it's too easy for some of these guys to say, ah, I didn't like that guy or whatever. You know, it becomes personal.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, you know how I feel about the Baseball Hall of Fame. I just don't have any time for the voting process, the way they've left Bonds and Clemens, and they've tried to be holier than thou about this stuff. And I don't really care about this either. I mean, he deserved to go. He absolutely deserved to go. But you know what? He'll get in next year. I don't really care.
Last one for you. What sporting event would you rather attend? The Super Bowl or the Olympics?
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, for me, it'd definitely be the Olympics because, you know, and I've said this before, to me, an in-person NFL isn't as good of an experience. The Olympics, it's not just that one. It's, yeah, I can go over and I can watch some curling, or maybe I can take in some luge, or I could go watch the skiing, or you can make it whatever you want it
just
to be.
Just be a part of the big to-do.
And I'm kicking around the idea of going to L.A. in 28.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Now, look, there's a lot of things I don't like. There's so much corruption in the Olympics, you know, leading up to the Olympics, and it's so wasteful how they build all this stuff, and then half the time it doesn't get used. And I think they could do it better, but it always brings me back in because when I watch these athletes, the other day, American women had a young lady win the silver in luge, and as soon as she crossed the line and saw her time, she started bawling before she even got off the luge. What a moment.
Yeah.
You know, she worked her whole life for that. And that's probably the only moment she's going to have. You know, Olympics are only once every 4 years. So it was, and then you see, I saw another one, the German one who actually probably should have got the silver. And on her last run, she didn't wreck, but she got sideways and completely wrecked her time. Hmm. And, you know, here again, the other side of that, she worked her whole life for that. And in half a second, she blew it.
Just like Lindsey Vonn. I mean, she's at least been there, done that. But for her to, you know, go out that way, that's rough.
Yeah. And she, you know, Lindsey Vonn, I know there's a lot of criticism of her. And I'm not sure medically she should have gone, but that didn't have anything to do with her hitting that gate.
No.
Downhill skiers are crazy. I mean, the amount of speed they're carrying, one little tiny mistake, and you're probably going to break a leg. There were two other people helicoptered off that mountain that day. So it's a rough the gig.
Yes, it is. All right, Dave. Well, it is time to get out of here. Let's get lost.
Oh, man. I guess the only get lost I have is you know, taking 3 weeks and getting, you know, no NHL. Because I love the Olympics, rough. But the problem with it being in Europe is by 5 o'clock, there's no sports to watch, and I'm not into watching the replays because I've already seen the scores.
Well, that's why we DVR it. And thanks for not spoiling. I'm going to say hashtag. Actually, I'm going to give a shout out to Chris Wechtenheiser from the Courier Express. Did you see he's moving on?
Yeah, he's going to Clearfield. He is, he's not moving that far.
Right, but I still, you know, that's a loss for Dubois. So, you know, I hope everything works out for him, and congratulations on everything that he has done here. That'll do it for this week's show. Don't forget to search for Under Review on Spotify, follow us, and leave a review. For Dave Glass, I'm Bob Anderson. We'll catch you next week right here on Connect FM.